Hi, I'm John Weber. My guest today is tenor saxophonist and composer Donnie McCaslin. He got an early start playing in the Monterey Jazz Festival's California All-Star Band 3 years as a high school student and started touring with Gary Burton at age 21. Now, with a career spanning 2 decades, Donnie McCaslin has a reputation as a top-shelf tenor saxophonist. His fusion of jazz and rock has grabbed the attention of audiences worldwide. Donnie McCaslin, welcome to Piano Jazz.
Thanks, John. Good to be here.
Now, what drew you to the sax in the first place?
Well, my father's a musician, and my parents were divorced when I was quite young, so I would spend one weekend day with my father. He would pick me up and drive me to downtown Santa Cruz to where the Pacific Garden Mall was. And there was a place called the Cooper House that was an old courthouse that had been converted into a bar, restaurant, shops, kind of a multi-use facility. But in front of that place was an outdoor cafe, and that's where my father's band played. And the name of the band was Warmth. So we would go down there. My dad would get me some bear claws and hot chocolate, and we'd have that, and then I'd help him to set up his instruments. He had a Wurlitzer piano, his vibraphone, and in the early days, he'd also set up a marimba as well. And when I was quite young, he had a chair and put it on the bandstand. So I would literally sit on the bandstand and just watch them as they played. And if the weather was good, as it often was in Northern California, we'd be there from 12 to 5 or something like that. So the group, it was sort of a revolving personnel, but there was usually a percussion player, there were singers, there were horn players. There was a particular tenor saxophone player whose name was Wesley Braxton, who played with my father's group, and he wore a tie-dye T-shirt. He was a hippie. He had a big beard, and he'd play these long, sort of avant-garde solos that would whip the audience into a frenzy sometimes. They'd be playing, my father's group, they played a combination of Great American Songbook, jazz classics, Caligator-esque Latin jazz, and then sort of funk kind of Mercy, 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 Feel Like Making Love, Mustang Sally, tunes like that. R&B, I guess you'd say. So especially on the Caligator tunes, there'd be these long vamps, and Wesley would play these solos, and it would just sort of build and build, and the audience would just be so captivated by it. I think that was compelling to me on some sort of level. And so when the time came, I was 12 years old, I had decided to switch out of a class that I was in to beginning orchestra where my best friend was playing clarinet. It was an impulsive decision on my part. My father asked me what instrument I wanted to play, and I said tenor saxophone. And looking back on it, I think it was because of Wesley's charisma as a player and as a person that I chose the saxophone.
So we have Wesley Braxton to thank for your magnificent career and your wonderful saxophone playing.
Well, I think for the very beginning moment, it was his inspiration.
And your desire to be a rock star like Wesley Braxton on stage, because I'm sure that the crowd went nuts and they cheered, and you thought, how hard could that be?
It was all, just really neat for a 12-year-old. It was a neat environment to take in and to grow up in.
Yeah. See, I would love to hear you play something. And what do you like?
Well, I was thinking about my father and about that period of my life, and also about my high school sort of education, which was so based around Duke Ellington. I thought Take the A-Train would be a fun choice.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Let's do it.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, Donnie, I love it.
Thanks, John. That was really fun.
Yeah, you know something? Those nice old tunes. I mean, how old were you when your dad probably played that for you for the first time or when you played it for the first time?
Well, I started playing the horn when I was 12. And I remember the first song I learned, it was a big deal. I learned Tequila. So I was rocking with Tequila for a little while. I think A-Train, somewhere in that first year or two, I learned A-Train. And then I started playing with my father's band probably about age 15, 16. And I was also lucky to go to a great high school. And my band director at the time, Don Keller, he had been in the Navy with Bill Berry. And they were both trumpet players. And Bill Berry, as you probably know, had played in Ellington's band and relocated to Los Angeles at a certain point. And he had had a bunch of Ellington charts. And he'd given them to Don Keller, my band director. And so we had this amazing experience of having access to, we had a whole Ellington book. And this was before that music was readily available to high school bands, high school band directors. So it was, I was so fortunate. I was so blessed to be in that situation. And I got in, you know, 14 years old, I got in the group and was immediately having to take these charts home to practice, diminuendo and crescendo and blue, Rockin' in Rhythm, Take the A-Train, Warm Valley, all these great tunes. So I've always had a real deep affinity for Duke Ellington from my father and through this high school band experience. And after finishing high school, I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston. And near the end of my time there, I started playing in Gary Burton's band. And that was sort of my transition into being a professional touring musician, I guess you'd say. And there was a song that Gary always played called Isfahan, which is a Billy Strayhorn ballad. And it's from the Far East Suite. And it was a number that, ironically, I didn't play. You know, I would play on most of the tunes of the set, but that particular ballad featured Gary. So I'd walk off the bandstand and I'd sit there. And I remember thinking, this is a beautiful song and I hope I get a chance to play it. And when my first record date came up years later, I recorded it. And then I did another version on a trio record that was called Recommended Tools, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And I just felt like I wanted to try it again in a trio format. So it's just one of my all-time favorite ballads, and I thought it might be something that would be fun for us to play.
Yeah, we should do it as a duo. I'd be thrilled to play it with you.
Be my pleasure. Thank you.
gorgeous, man.
Oh, thanks.
You have such a beautiful tone, and what I mean is vibrato and texture and just the sound you get. I want to know which saxophonists you've particularly admired that have helped to shape your sound.
It's been different people at different periods of my life, but I do remember when I was quite young, there was a record of Keith Jarrett's called Belonging that has saxophone player Jan Gabarek on it. And I remember his sound had a huge impression on me as a teenager, just the breadth of it, and it was so big. I know that had a big influence on me. And John Coltrane was such a huge influence on me as a teenager, and his sound probably goes without saying. It's just so beautiful and so robust. And I think those were two of my earliest influences sound-wise. In terms of what I was imagining the tenor sax to sound like, I think it was those two guys. And then a little bit later into my teenage years, I got into Michael Brecker, who also had a beautiful, beautiful sound on the instrument. And that had a huge influence on me. And moving into my college years, right after college, I was just entranced with the sound of Sonny Rollins and Wayne Shorter and Joe Henderson.
Those are people who are definitely worthy of borrowing and stealing, I would say. Just they're...
Yeah, they're incredible.
Oh, and as are you. I mean, you got your own sound too. And if I'm not mistaken, you actually had to replace Michael Brecker when you joined one of your bands.
Well, he was in Steps Ahead, and when he stopped playing with that group, I think they stopped playing for a while, and they reformed with another Norwegian saxophonist whose name is Bendik. Alex Foster did it for a period, and then I joined in the mid-90s, and I did it for, I'm going to say, about 3 years. It was interesting because I had so loved Michael Brecker's playing in that group and over some of those songs that all of a sudden I was going to be playing. And it was a really great opportunity for me to think about, okay, how am I going to do this in a way that honors the way he played it, but feels like it's my own voice? And it was great to be put into that situation because I obviously felt like, well, I can't just play it the way he did it. Not that I could even execute that, but I have to find my own way of playing these tunes that really keeps that core feeling there. And so it's a great opportunity for me.
You definitely asserted your identity with that band, and you sound, all those records are terrific. You're playing, even at that point, I'm going to guess that you were composing quite a bit at that time, that in the mid-90s.
Yeah, I was starting to write a lot more, and I'd only written a few tunes in college, really, for my senior recital, and then it was after that, in the 90s, where I really started writing a lot, and part of it was trying to find my own voice, frankly. I remember Gary Burton had said, when I was young, one way to find your own voice as an improviser is to write tunes. And I thought about that and just kept at it and kept writing, and one thing led to another.
Well, I think this would be a great time to play one of your compositions. What do you think?
I'd be happy to. I was thinking there's a tune of mine that I wrote for a record I did called Perpetual Motion, and the idea was to try to capture the feeling from Cannonball Adderley's record Mercy, 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 which I loved so much as a kid. And I thought, to write a song with that feeling and also thinking about the great American singer Donny Hathaway. So this is called Memphis Redux, and I'd love to play it with you.
I'd love it, man. Let's do it. Thank you. Yeah, nice rockin' number. Kind of reminds me of my childhood. That is very reminiscent of Cannonball. Loved
nice.
It.
Thank you. It was really fun. I really enjoy playing that tune because it can go in so many different directions.
It really does. You're a great writer. Well, there's more coming up with Donnie McCaslin. I'm John Weber, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR Music. Donnie, on Casting for Gravity, your 2013 release, tell me about producing an album with so many electronic textures.
Well, it was great. Tim LaFave, our bassist, is like a DJ. He's got various pedals in front of him, and he's just manipulating the bass sound in a lot of different ways. That's just really creative and amazing. And Jason Linder, who played piano and keyboards on the record, also just a great sonic presence and very organically moves from sound to sound. And it was great being in the studio and having the opportunity for him to layer different sounds. And then David Binney, who produced the record, also added different synths and added some voice stuff. So it was really all these factors coming together to give it this really big sound, which is, you know, what we wanted, just to have a big sounding record with a lot of layers of sonic information.
It is pretty special. And you're doing it live on tour as well.
That's right. Yeah.
And you'll probably need somebody to set up the rig. Maybe your son could help you set up the rig like you did for your dad.
Exactly. Well, he's a little young for that. My son is only a year and a half right now. But he enjoys music a lot, so we'll see what happens.
Oh, yeah. He loves it when you play, huh?
He does. It's fun in our house when I practice. He wants to grab the saxophone, and then I put him in his crib, and I give him the little toy saxophone he has. And so he's holding that, and then I continue practicing. And it's beautiful because he reacts to rhythm, so he'll bounce up and down in his crib while I'm playing, and it's really fun. I mean, it's a really emotional thing for me to have him be so into it and to just share music with him. And my daughter, too. My daughter loves to sing, and, you know, we sing songs all the time, and we make up games with taking melodies from songs that she knows and using different lyrics and stuff like that for fun. So it's great. I enjoy a lot of parenthood, and that's something I particularly enjoy, is sharing music with them in different ways.
I think it's very cool that your son, even at his very young age, is into listening to you play unaccompanied saxophone.
Yeah.
That's somehow cool. Well, he's playing along. He imagines he's playing along, but he's actually hearing you play just saxophone all by itself.
Yeah.
And I'd like to hear you do that. If you don't mind, could I indulge myself and listen to you play some unaccompanied sax?
Oh, sure. There's a song that I wrote a few years ago called M that I think would be a good vehicle. So I'll give that a try.
That's a nice, short, memorable title. I like it. M. Thank you. That's a fantastic piece of music.
Thanks, John.
And extremely well played. I have to say it reminds me a little bit of the Bach unaccompanied cello suites. I can hear sort of the walking bass line. And it's the Bach unaccompanied cello suites, by the way, were just one note at a time, sort of like a connect the dots presentation of an idea that Bach had. And your piece reminds me very much of Bach.
Oh, thank you. Well, it was a piece that I had originally written for a larger group. I did a recording called Declaration a few years back, and this piece had a brass quintet and alto flute, piano, guitar, bass drums, and myself on saxophone. And it was fun to just try to strip it down and see what I could do with it by myself.
Well, it's a very, very nice condensing of the internal logic of your band down to a single person. That's quite remarkable.
Thank you.
And Bach-like, I might add.
Well, I'm completely honored to be mentioned
in
alongside.
The same breath with
Bach.
Yeah,
oh, of course.
Well, I mean, even in this century here, 300 years after Bach, people are still playing and writing songs that sound sort of Bach-like. They have the sort of chord leadings that Bach may have come up with himself, like All the Things You Are.
Yes.
For example.
I love that tune, All the Things You Are. And it's one of those classic songs. I remember reading an interview that the great alto saxophone player Lee Konitz did recently and was talking about the state of jazz education. And I think it was something around how modern players, have they lost touch with the tradition and so on and so forth. And Lee said something like, I can still play All the Things You Are with everybody. So it's such a warhorse of a tune. How about we give it a try?
Yeah, man. I love it. Thank you. Well done, Donnie.
Thank you. Likewise, John.
I can see why Lee Konitz plays that song every gig, I think.
It's an incredible tune.
Yeah, Lee Konitz is definitely someone who respects the past and is very much open to the future. He plays with some young guys. And, you know, I mean, are musicians who are able to reach into both places, go to the past and reach into the future, are those the musicians who are best able to experience the right now?
Well, I don't know if I could say a general statement about that, but I think that the two kind of go hand in hand. You know, for me, there's the depth of the history that you have to learn and you have to incorporate into your musical vocabulary. And it's also, I think, important to keep moving ahead and being aware of things that are happening right now. I mean, personally, I just try to be in the moment as an improviser. And when I'm composing too, I try to be in the moment and not let external forces have too much influence, you know, in terms of feeling pressure to write something that seems this way or seems that way. I just try to be in the moment and be really honest about what I feel like I need to write. And playing is the same way, but I feel that I need to inform my playing by checking out the great masters. And I continue to just be so deeply inspired. So I don't know. I just try to put it all together in an honest and compelling way.
I think it really shows in your composing. You're a very, very skilled composer. And I'd like to play another one of your tunes, if it's okay with you.
Well, what I was thinking was this song that incorporates two of my musical heroes, Aretha Franklin and Bill Frisell. And the Aretha Franklin comes to me from my sister Jean, who loved Motown and specifically Aretha Franklin. So I heard a lot of that when I was at her house visiting her when I was young. And Bill Frisell is just a modern jazz icon. So much of what he does is compelling to me. And thinking about his compositional style, sometimes this deep sense of Americana strikes me. So with this piece, I was thinking about that sense of Americana that Bill Frisell represents to me, and also the soul of Aretha Franklin.
Well, let's do it. What's the title?
This is Late Night Gospel.
Let's do it, man.
Cool. Thank you.
That's a fantastic tune, man.
Thank you, John.
And it sounds, as you said, very Americana. There's some just sort of, I can't even describe it. It's exactly what you said, just beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
And it's fun to jam on it, too.
Yeah, it's fun.
I cannot believe this hour has gone as quickly as it has.
It's gone quickly.
You're a fantastic guest, and I really, really have enjoyed having you on, but I think we are down to our last number of the day.
Okay, okay. Well, I was thinking about the Great American Songbook thing, which we've done a few of, and I have to say one of my all-time favorite tunes is What Is This Thing Called Love?
Can't go wrong with that.
Can we do that?
I love it. Absolutely.
Great. Thank you.
Wow, that was a blast, man.
Thanks.
Thanks for being on Piano Jazz.
It was my pleasure. I love this show, and it's an honor to be here.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with John Weber and his guest, Donnie McCaslin. This program is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio and is recorded at Hirsch Studios in New York City, with post-production in the Elaine T. Friedman Suite at ETV Radio in Columbia, South Carolina. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Andrew Shire, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production manager Grant Jackson, production assistant Laura Hunsberger. The executive producer is Kobe Hennessy. The executive in charge is Linda O'Brien. Special thanks to Anya Grundman, director and executive producer of NPR Music. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the Friends of Piano Jazz, NPR member stations, and NPR. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR.